Rise and shine, Atlanta. Atlanta? Atlanta. Everybody, the morning shift's back. Yeah. All right. I am Bo Morgan. They call me Swib Billy. He is the All-American National Champion, former Atlanta Falcon. Michael, don't ask him what the P stands for, Penix, and you got to say it, Dylan. People ratted you out yesterday that you didn't. And she is the founder of Allie's Army, the first lady of Atlanta baseball, the queen of tofu, and straight off an airplane from Las Vegas, Miss Allie Mack. And you heard me mention him earlier. He's our producer. He's our fill-in. He's the most vanilla man in radio and makes the most awkward wave. You make me uncomfortable when you wave. I'm ignoring you waving in my background, Dylan. We are the morning shift. And you're back.
The most vanilla, but the most positive. I want to throw that out there because it's Monday morning. Definitely he's just like, let's go. He's always happy.
And I'm like, Dylan, shut up. I think it's Monday morning. I don't need that.
I think yesterday was the first. Was that the first time you and I have just worked together alone on a show? Because that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. But I had a blast doing it, though.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Obviously, out there at Falcons training camp, Dylan and I yesterday for a few hours, man, getting to catch up with the fans. The only thing that stinks about doing a show from 9 to 1 is you don't get to watch practice.
Oh, yeah,
Like, I'm literally, Dylan and I are turned around looking through the weight room windows, through the weight room garage doors out to the field to see if we can catch anything. I did walk away for just a minute to be able to catch a little bit of practice, and I saw a fight. So that was good. Seemed to be kind of the theme of the day. But
they're out there scrapping for you, Mike.
Let's not bury the lead. How is Backstreet Boys?
Man, we're going to get into all of this in the Mac drop today.
Your face just lit up so much. I love it. Like, man, yes, it's good.
Yes, Backstreet Boys. Absolutely insane. It was 24 hours ago. I was thinking, I'm going to be on air this time tomorrow, and I was not asleep yet. So it was kind of a whirlwind of a weekend, and Vegas tried to keep me, y'all. Like, I almost didn't get home yesterday, but I made it, got in the driveway at 8:10. So I'll fill you in on all the Backstreet Boys stuff, but I'm telling you, if you're in trouble with, like, your girl at all, take her. You know, like, just if you have an anniversary coming up, take her, birthday, something, take her to the Sphere. It's absolutely incredible, and I'm not paid to say that.
Wow. So. Maybe you should be.
Maybe I should be. Let's work on that. Let's work on that. Well, coming up at 6:20, like you mentioned, Mike, you and Dylan were out at Atlanta Falcons training camp. You got to talk with Chris Lindstrom. We're going to replay some of that audio. 8 a.m. today, wake-up call. This is where we take your questions. We are doing wake-up call a little bit different now, where we just want to answer your questions that you have about Falcons training camp, maybe the Braves. So get them in via Twitter, X. You can always call in. Again, we'll take those calls at 8 a.m. today. And like you guys were just talking about, I kept seeing rumblings of scuffles coming out of training camp. So what was going on?
Well, they were fighting, Allie. They were aggressive. They were aggressive. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
Well, they were fighting, Allie.
It's to me, it feels rare when you you see fights without pads on, right? Normally, they wait till they get the shoulder pads on, and there's a little bit of hitting, and somebody accidentally goes to the ground, even though they don't want them to, and that's when they fight. I saw something Thursday, and I don't know if it was Ramondi or Josh Kendall or even D-Led that reported that they saw Storm Norton and James Pierce talking. And
this is Josh Kendall because I was standing next to him.
And so, like, supposedly, and I was a little bit further away, but you could hear James Pierce saying, "That ain't it, bro. That ain't it." And I noticed that interaction. I couldn't hear it, but I noticed it, and I was like, "That's interesting. That's gonna that's something to watch because that's gonna fester."
Yeah, always does.
And it definitely festered. But the other right tackle, I believe, is the one that it festered with, which was McGarry, right? And then
festered with a few people. It sounded like.
And then Bergeron steps in. And Leonard Floyd steps in, and you've got a little bit of a tussle. Young guys going hard and trying to push veterans early in camp always turns into a fight.
It's funny you bring up the Josh Kendall thing, because I was standing there before that happened. I was standing next to Josh Kendall. We're talking about some position battles, and he actually joined the show with Dylan and I yesterday. He was good to talk to, but we were kind of watching some position battles. So I'm watching the far sideline, watching guys run in and out. And Josh Kendall kind of looks at me and he goes, man, was James Pierce just talking trash to Storm Norton right there? And I was like, I don't know. I missed it, man. Where is it? Where? And at that point, they had already like separated from one another. But that was day one. Day one. And I asked Josh Kendall this. And I said, hey, man, if he was talking trash, do you like it? Do you like it just a little bit? And he was like, I was about to ask you the same question. He was like, I don't know. It's like I like the competitive edge and I like the competitive spirit, but it's like a rookie.
It's a fine line.
It's like, boy, be careful.
It's a fine line.
That was a huge talking point on Thursday when we were out at Falcons training camp, was about how rookies should keep their heads down. Like, you just don't say anything. Don't really make yourself known. So is that surprising to you to see that happen?
I don't 100% agree with that on the practice field.
Yeah, I was going to say, on the field's a little bit different.
Okay.
Yes, around the facility.
Kind of want to be noticed out there.
Around the facility, there's rookie hazens. Like, you know, they got to carry everybody's helmet or shoulder pads or your position player stuff, right? There's, you know, that's the lesser of what hazing. You know, no one's getting tied to a goalpost anymore, I think, or taped to it or whatever. But, yeah, there's an extent. But on the field, you should show that intensity. But also, the first day of training camp, the veterans are going to be like, dude, this ain't nothing. Like, we don't even have pads on yet. Chill out. Mm-hmm. But I do like intensity. I want James Pierce to bring an edge to this team on the defensive side of the ball. You want that. And that's who James Pierce has kind of been said to be. And he got a bad rap for it in college. But I think this is a lot like who he was in college, not... You know, and it probably some teammates don't like that.
I'm sure, yeah. Well, I can tell you the offensive line doesn't like it. And it was so funny. And I got to bring you guys in on one of the stories yesterday. So Dylan and I are playing the Tyler Allgeier interview from Saturday on the show that we were doing yesterday. So I was like, hey, I'm going to use this chance to walk up the hill a little bit, check out some of our practice. And there was a family, like, getting a picture around, like, a Falcons sign. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, there's, like, two boys on one side and a little boy and a little girl on the other. And the dad and the mom are like, all right, squeeze in and take the photo. And haymakers start getting thrown on the field, like, behind him. And they're about to take the picture. I mean, just haymakers. And, like, all of a sudden, the crowd erupts. It's like, fight! And one of the little boys, probably about 7 or 8 years old, he looks at his dad and he goes, Daddy, why are they fighting? And the dad goes, they fighting for the same reason y'all fight. Now get in the picture. And it's so true, dude. It's so true. They're fighting because they are around each other and they are constantly hitting each other and they are constantly leaning on each other. And one guy gets a shirt grabbed and one guy's talking trash and one guy gets a sack and one guy, you know, maybe, you know, buries the defensive lineman as the defensive lineman trips going backwards. They're always around each other. It doesn't mean they technically don't like each other, although there's some of that as well. But yes, man, they are just always around each other. There's high stress levels right now. There's competition going on. And now, do I want James Pierce every day to show up and fight? No. And I think Jeff Olbrich kind of mentioned that yesterday in some of his comments. It's like, yeah, we love the competitive edge. Do we want it to come to a fisticuffs? No. Do we want a Donnybrook on the field every day? No. But those things are going to happen when you're competing at a high level. And that's kind of my biggest takeaway from it.
And I'm not reading into some of the detractors of, oh, this is, calling it a little bit bigger deal than it is and blowing it a little bit out of proportion, which I've seen a couple of writers that I read some of their stuff at, like, it's the end of the world. And it's not. If anything, you know, I think a good fight here and there makes you stronger. I always feel like if you have a little bit of a – now, obviously, you know, you break somebody's jaw, it's going to be bad for your relationship. But
yeah. Don't take the helmet off, man.
But a little bit of a tussle, a little bit of a disagreement, I think can strengthen a bond. And within reason, you know, especially when you move on from these, as long as you don't hold a grudge. But, like, I want intensity. I tweeted yesterday, I'm here. Give me all this energy. I'm sorry, but a first-round edge rusher, if I'm not saying if he doesn't come in and get in a fight, then I have questions. But if he with a guy like – Jalen Walker, to me, and James Pierce are two different situations. Jalen Walker was the babe, the boy. Everybody's All-American. You know, it was a heralded pick. James Pierce was a guy that's been doubted since the pick. Oh, it was too much. He came in with a chip on his shoulder. You know what? James Pierce plays with a chip on his shoulder. He did in college, I feel like. You watch Jalen Walker, he plays aggressive, but that chip is not the same, okay? His chip on his shoulder is more of the Kirby Smart player that is everything. It's all controlled.
Yeah.
It's a controlled chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, it is.
James Pierce is like, every once in a while, you're going to see me a little out of control, but that's how I function. I feed off negative.
It's funny because the first thing that I thought about, and the names start coming out, it's like the first one, I think Javon Gwynn, Matthew Bergeron, kind of a little bit. And then, you know, then there's the Caleb McGarry, I think it was Caleb McGarry, in the second one. But what's funny about when I hear Matthew Bergeron, Javon Gwynn come out of this, is you know, my first thought is like, Javon Gwynn and Matthew Bergeron are not blocking James Pierce in practice right now. They're not. Like, they're not, like, eventually, okay, maybe there's like some kind of random pick stunt that you'll run way down the road and maybe they bump into one another. But this is just straight up being like, Matthew Bergeron and Javon Gwynn are both in what, year three now? And it's like, dude, they're veterans now. Like, they're going to go out of their way to seek you out if you're talking trash. And it sounded to me like they had a little bit of a dispute to settle on the other side of the line of scrimmage with whoever James Pierce was going at.
Well, don't get lost in it that when I hear Matthew Bergeron's name mentioned, I get the same good feeling that I do when I hear James Pierce in one. Because it almost, and from what it sounded like to me, was Bergeron was kind of late to the party.
Exactly.
But stepped in for his guy. You know, I got asked I got a message, like a DM or whatever, from our good friend Anthony, and he was like, hey, if Kyle Pitts goes off, will you pay him, blah, blah, blah. And I say no. You know why? Because Drake needs to be paid. You're going to have to pay Bijan. Matthew Bergeron is in year three of a four-year deal. He gets paid. Because you want to talk about the inconsistent play of the tight end, the left guard has been nothing but pretty consistent since he got here. And it was needed.
Keeps getting better, man.
We went from who's the left guard this year every year to Matthew Bergeron.
Well, we are only scratching the surface on everything that's coming out of Atlanta Falcons training camp. This all has me very excited that we're going to be back out there tomorrow. So coming up next, Mike and Dylan had some time with Chris Lindstrom. We're going to let you hear that audio. Apparently, he is a big fan of video games. So that is coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
It is all pro and Pro Bowl offensive lineman and right guard for the Atlanta Falcons, Chris Lindstrom. Chris, man, thank you first of all for joining us today. How was practice out there, man?
It's awesome, and I think now my seventh camp here, I think this might have been the most fans I've ever seen here, and so there's an energy and a buzz.
Boom.
And that helps. I mean, these days are so hard. You know, it's hot, and I know it's evolved over the years, but camp is still camp. And so when you have the energy of 5,000 people here, it gets you through, especially when you do those red zone periods.
I'm curious, and look, I don't want to point out anything for the obvious, but you're sweating right now. You just got off the field. I was telling Dylan earlier, for me, I was always like 11 and a half or 12 pounds after a training camp practice. And you get the double IVs, and you go in there with Denny Long, and you get hooked up, and the EMTs in there. What is it for you on a daily basis? Like, how much are you losing, gaining? How hard do you have to fight to get it back on every day?
Man, it's the same exact thing. Nothing's changed. I'm usually at the minimum 7 upwards. I think the most I've ever lost is 11 pounds. But it's 7 to 11 pounds just about every practice. And like you said, Danny Long and the staff that we got here in the training room and nutritionist Steve Benjamin, they give us every tool in the book. But that's the expectation, you know, of, you know, you're a rookie, you're a younger guy, you come in. And, you know, myself being from the Northeast, this is an adjustment. Like, you got to be at your best every day, and you lose 10, 11 pounds. All of a sudden, you're not on top of your hydration, and, you know, you're dragging out there. So, same thing. I'm 2 IVs, you know. A Pedialyte and there, you know, staying on top of it.
Love it, man.
It is Falcons all pro and Pro Bowl right guard Chris Lindstrom joining us here on Sports Radio 9-9 The Game. Dylan Matthews and Mike P, former Atlanta Falcon and former Atlanta Falcon offensive lineman Mike Johnson with us here. Chris, I do want to ask you this. Obviously, you got to get some great time in games with Ryan Newsel, who's obviously taking over at that starting center job. How big was it, and how big is it going to be moving forward, getting those snaps and getting those games with him? Obviously, you're going to be next to him throughout the year this year. How big is it going to be going into this year, being able to hit the ground running with him?
I think right now it's the huge emphasis. The whole point of training camp is to work out the kinks in those combinations. And so Ryan and I, just about every single combination, we're talking it through, saying, hey, did you like my spacing here? Do you need a little bit more? You need a little bit less? And if our timing's off, you know, we kind of work through it. And Ryan's great. I mean, he's as sharp as anybody mentally. And he's doing a great job communicating up there and doing a great job leading us. But, yeah, I think right now it's just kind of working those combinations. And we have so many reps in the bank, but even like even myself with Kayla, we're talking it through right now because we want to be perfect heading into week one.
I love it, man. And I want to hit on that just a little bit. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds for the listeners out there, but I talk all the time about you guys wide zone. I've talked to Jake about this last year. Jake's actually the only guy left on the team that I played with. He's been around that freaking long. But I talked about how friendly this offense can be under Dwayne Ledford in the wide zone, and you fit it like a puzzle piece. I mean, you fit it absolutely perfectly to what they're looking for. And obviously when Zach Robinson got here last year, it was very apparent to me. It was like, hey, D-Led, you deal with the run game. I'll deal with the passing game. We'll kind of move from there. But is that evolving at all? I mean, I talk about it all the time on the show. You guys pull less as a pair of guards than any offense in the NFL. I mean, is that something that you think we can expect to continue to see, or do you see any wrinkles coming down the pipe this year in terms of the run game?
I think we're always constantly looking to evolve, and I think you do a lot of self-scouting. And so Zach's doing a great job right now, and like you said, Led does such a great job with us in the wide zone. And I think what makes the wide zone so great is they talk about all the time in the NFL playing fast, but how do you play fast? You know this, like when you're protected in a combination, you got somebody coming with you, and you're not afraid of failure, you're not afraid of a guy beating you inside, because you know you got your teammate there, then you can play even faster. And so when you get on that, and then you just start chasing that speed and that confidence in one another, and I think that's what makes us so great.
Yeah.
How's it been as far as the adjustment? Obviously, every quarterback has a different cadence and the way they just call out the plays and things like that. How's it been adjustment to the cadence of Michael Penix Jr.?
Mike's done a great job. I think we got to work the reps at the end of last season, and then he did a great job this spring. And hopefully by the time we get to the first game of the season, you know, I can hear Mike's voice in my sleep, you know, and that's the biggest thing. And, timing it up, like, you know, how he rolls his huts, like how that difference. And honestly, it gets to a point now at some point mid season where he says hut and it's supposed to be, you know, on one, but it's really, you can tell by his voice that he thinks it's on two or something like that.
Yeah.
Like you get to that point where you can even tell the inflections in his voice. Not there yet, but we're definitely getting there.
I love to hear that, man. I was explaining to these guys in the build-up of training camp the anxiety that can kind of go through you as a player. I used to lay down in bed, and I'd wake up, and I would be in a one-on-one pass pro in my brain. You know what I mean? I'd be stressing my chest muscles, and I'd be like, and it's just some people don't understand because, it's always constantly kind of evolving in your mind. You always think about it, obviously always being here and you know, being a part of that. So I love to hear that about Penix's cadence. And I had the same questions. Look, we all watched the Kirk Cousins Netflix documentary. It's week one. T.J. Watt's kind of getting off on the snap count, and Kirk Cousins is going, yeah, there's just a lot going on, man. You know, a lot of motions, trying to get a hard count with the motions and timing up Charlie Warner and things like that. What are the differences that you see throw? I mean, I realize you guys haven't even strapped the pads on, but the battery of Neuzel to Penix, obviously different than the battery you dealt with last year. Is there anything – have you guys had any hiccups from that aspect?
Not so far, and I think I observed this too. Like this past week, I don't think we've had any, you know, standard week one of camp things. You know, fumbles, snaps, you know, balls hitting off guys, and I think we've been pretty clean operationally. And I think you know you continue to evolve that, start working in silent cadence. So by the time you play on the road, it's not the first time you've ever done it.
Yep.
And Mike too, for being a young player, is changing up his snap counts and working it now, and it's challenging us as O-linemen. Because, you know, I think this is probably the worst shape we're going to be in, you know, all season.
Yep.
And so if we're straining mentally to think about the cadence now, by the time we get in season, we're going to be rolling.
It is Falcons All-Pro and Pro Bowl right guard Chris Lindstrom joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dylan Matthews and Mike Johnson hanging out here with you. I want to talk about what you've been seeing from a couple of these interior guys that we know and we saw flashes from last year. When you talk about Ruka Rororo, when you talk about Brandon Dorlus, those are guys that, again, we saw flashes of last year, but didn't get to see too much, unfortunately, because of injuries and things of that nature. And we've been hearing that, obviously, new defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich has been sending a lot of blitzes. Blitz has been pretty blitz-heavy so far here. So what have you noticed from the guys on the interior, the Ruka Roros, the Brandon Dorluses of the world so far?
Yeah, I think from what Mike said about what Coach Ledford did for my career, I think Brick has got it for these guys, and these guys are fitting into it. They're feeling confident. They're having fun. And you can see a big growth in them. And then, you know, I think year two in the NFL is the biggest jump for guys. And it's really cool to see them out here, how much better they've gotten, how much stronger they are, and how much more comfortable they are playing every single day.
I love to hear it, man. And we got a few minutes left here with Chris Lindstrom, Pro Bowl right guard, All-Pro right guard for the Atlanta Falcons. What about you? What have you focused on throughout the offseason? And obviously, I think did we start with the Panthers last year? It was an early season game against the Panthers, and always that matchup with their interior defensive linemen is always a tough thing. But look, you've been all pro. You've been Pro Bowl. You've reached the highest of the highs in terms of grades with PFF and everything else like that. What is Chris Lindstrom focused on going into 2025?
For myself personally, it's, you know, continuing to what I do best, and you know that's the wide zone, and so I still want to be, you know, the best in the world at that, and working the fundamentals that it takes for that. And then in the pass pro, you're always seeking perfection. You're never going to get it, and no matter what, you know, there's Jake Matthews and Zach Martin are probably the twin, where it's like every single pass that they see, they set, it's perfection. You know, I'm constantly chasing that, and I think knowing your own skill set, knowing your strengths and weaknesses, and so for myself, it's just constantly working the pass stuff, constantly working, you know, schematically and everything. So
I'm curious to hear too, and we got into this a little bit last year, the screen game, and I had a feeling like going into this there would be some more emphasis from Zach Robinson on the screen game. What can we expect out of that? I mean, do you like running screens? Do you like getting out in space, or is it like, dude, I don't need to be out there in the wide open field trying to block a DB?
Man, I love it. I mean, anything to slow those guys down, and honestly, one less drop back pass rep I'm good with. So, but the spacing aspect of it too, right? It's spacing and timing, and yep, each screen has a different spacing and different timing, and you know, it looks like you just throw it out there, and you know, he hits it and runs in their space, but there's a lot of details that go into it, and it's something that you can't take for granted. It needs a lot of work, so I'm glad we're doing it.
And we actually talked a little bit earlier, and you mentioned Michael Penix a couple of different times. I thought in his three starts we would probably see him take off and run a couple of more times than he did. Only like once, maybe twice, did he take off and actually scramble. Talk to us a little bit about how that changes things in terms of how you are rushed as an offensive lineman. If he takes off and runs one time over in the game, all of a sudden the defense tackle's eyes are in the backfield a little bit more. He's having to kind of two-gap and make sure he can shed. It can really change the name of the game in terms of y'all's job.
Yeah, for sure. I think you described it great. And, you know, when you had Kirk and then Matt Ryan was here today, those guys were more traditional pocket passers. And so you know you're going to get push up the middle, right? Because those guys are as quick in their progression. So you know you're going to get a lot of power rushes, and they're going to try and penetrate up the middle because they're not so worried about getting flushed out to the outside. And those guys have, you know, their superpowers that they can process everything so quickly and get the ball out. And then, you know, a little bit different when, you know, Marcus and Desmond, there's a little bit softer on the inside, a little bit deeper in the pass rush to keep those guys kind of in the pocket. And Mike, you know, we're constantly figuring out is and just where his depth of his drop is going to be. And I think when we're out there playing, you're not thinking about where, you know, where Mike is. You just have this sixth sense that, you know, all right, I'm getting knocked back. How much space do I have to Mike? All right, I really got to dig in right here because I know Mike's probably a foot behind me. And kind of knowing, hey, I can run the guy up the field a little bit, or, you know, I got to set a little bit deeper because Mike's going to be deeper. And so just kind of right now working that where he is in the pocket.
That is Chris Lindstrom joining Mike and Dylan at Falcons training camp yesterday. Was there anything surprising in that conversation with Chris there, or is that all pretty status quo for where we are in training camp at this point?
Yeah, sure, some of it, but I thought it was interesting that he talked about Zach Martin and Jake Matthews in the same light as far as their pass sets, because Zach Martin is heralded by a lot of people, including some in this room, as one of the greatest guards to ever play the game.
He's going to the Hall of Fame.
And so, if, you know, him putting Jake Matthews in that same air is interesting, because Jake is a guy that's underappreciated in the city. And for what he's been to this team and this offensive line. The other thing was, I thought it was very interesting that he talked about Jeff Ulbrich being for Ruka Ro-Ro-Ro and Brandon Dorlus and David Onyemata and on the guys on the defensive line, the same as what Dwayne Ledford's been for he and Caleb and Jake and Matthew Bergeron and even Ryan Neusel to an extent, because you know, the Falcons run, and I don't have to say this, Mike says this all the time, a very offensive line-friendly system up front, right? Blocking scheme, have you. So for him to say that Ulbrich will be for those guys what D-Led has been for him and his brethren up front, that makes me think that everything that they do is going to fit what they have up front. And I do believe that's what this attacking style defense is. And it's funny because I talked about it the other day about how I think this defense will be more aggressive, more attacking. And then what came out of practice after Saturday? that the defense was aggressive and attacking. So, and not even just that, but with the ball as well.
There's just so much that's happening with Falcons training camp. We're going to continue to have these conversations, all the takeaways from all the practices over the weekend. But coming up, we're going to get into the front page. We've got the Hall of Fame inductions to cover, and we've got my Allie Mack drop. I think concerts are ruined for me forever. That is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the morning shift with Mike, Bo, Allie Mack, and Dylan. And yes, the Braves Rangers series, not pretty. Friday lost 8-3. Saturday, 6-5. Yesterday, 8-1. Bryce Elder walked 4 batters, gave up 6 hits and 8 runs. Grant Holmes has now been placed on the 60-day IL, and Braves have acquired right-handed pitcher Eric Fetty.
Carnage is the word for this starting rotation. They all the guys that they started the season with have now either, or actually they're all currently on the IL. And remember, Strider didn't start the season in the rotation. I made the mistake, Michael, last night of reading the comments from they, because the Braves announced the move. And I just said, well, I wonder what the reaction is to this, because is it going to be, hey, we get it, it's July 27th, or now 28th, but it was 27th when they made the move, and they're just ravaged with injuries in the starting rotation, or is it going to be ridiculous clown stuff? And it was ridiculous clown stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know what you thought it was going to be.
I thought there might be a little sense of, little common sense, actually. That's
the common sense. People don't comment on stuff like that, man. It's
there was a couple.
It's the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You know what I mean? It's usually the people who are smart enough to understand the situation are not the ones commenting negative things under the post.
I think I see extreme levels of the negative though. For
it's
me,
just the whole thing's just unfortunate, man. It it's like I've actually been saying this for a while now, that the Braves fans that are downtrodden, I can excuse, because you feel like there was a 8-year window here where you're going to be, you know, beating your way into the World Series, and it just feels like that opportunity has sort of come and gone. This team will bounce back, and you'll get all these pitchers back hopefully for the start of next season, if not at some point next season, and hopefully these hitters that are, you know, starting to try to turn it around, especially Michael Harris, hopefully they hit the ground running next year. That's all you can say at this point. Any other sense of critique or anything is just it's you're just wasting your time. There's nothing left there to be talked about.
This run started in 18, correct? Or was it 17?
You would know better than me. I think
18.
Yeah. The last time the Falcons made the playoffs was 17. So
we talked about that yesterday and how Arthur Blank's 82, and we're like, dude, so they haven't been to the playoffs since he was 74. Or 75. I mean, that's crazy to think about it in that light.
My point is the Braves playoff streak is coming to an end.
Yeah.
And when the Braves started, the Falcons, it was coming to an end. So I'm just saying.
Atlanta sports karma, man.
Did we just sacrifice the 2025 season of the Braves for the Falcons 2025 season? Okay with that.
I'd take it. At this point, I have no choice but to take it, but I'd take it.
I would have taken it at the beginning of the season. Had you told me that, honestly.
Well, moving on to Deion Sanders, he's dealing with some health issues, and he actually mentioned that he had to make a will recently because of them, but there's really not a lot of information around what's going on exactly.
It's a really weird thing because he missed a lot of time during the spring. He hasn't even been around a lot. He even mentioned it. He's at Big 12 media days that he wants to get to know some of the players he hasn't really even met. Said at Big 12 Media Days that he was back and healthy, and now all of a sudden he's, you know, and he claims it's about the health of the team. It is a lot of weird foreshadowing around all of this.
Yeah, we're going to find out later today, like you're talking about, the press conference coming out with the medical team that, you know, we'll get a lot more insight. But he had an amputation in the foot last offseason. And it's just scary stuff, man. It's definitely scary stuff. So I hope, you know, all the best health for him. And they open with who? Georgia Tech, if I'm not mistaken. So
that's right, in Boulder.
Yep, there you go.
Well, in lighter
news. On a Friday night.
Ichiro Suzuki, CeCe Sabathia, Billy Wagner, Dick Allen, and Dave Parker were all inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday in Cooperstown. Did you guys catch any of this?
I love the Ichiro part of the speech talking about the Marlins. He talked about the Marlins. He goes, when you guys contacted me to sign me to a contract, I had no idea. I had no idea y'all were actually a team. Oh, man, I thought that was funny. No, but what's awesome about this is I'm 38 years old, and you guys kind of feel this too. It's like the people that I watched as a little boy growing up are now starting to be inducted and, you know, in my 20s and things like that. So it's just really cool, man. All these guys individually, just great athletes, great players, and it's cool to see them up at the podium.
Ichiro, he just looks so much different from when he played. Like, he looks like he's aged so much in the last, like, 6 or 7 years. And I'm not trying to knock on him. And CeCe Sabathia, I mean, he doesn't like the same person anymore. So, yeah, it was cool. It's cool to see. It is weird, though, seeing Billy Wagner go in and CeCe Sabathia and Ichiro. Like, it's very, very weird.
Well, Bubba Wallace won the Brickyard 400 yesterday. It is his third career NASCAR Cup victory, and he's the first African-American to win a major race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Here they come off of turn four. The Brickyard belongs to Bubba. Wallace wins at Indy, and he's going to the playoffs.
Unbelievable.
Awesome stuff, man.
You talk about earning a win.
Yes. Lord of mercy.
Allie, he's got, I think there's 7 laps to go, and he's out front by about a little over 4.5 seconds. And it feels, and they had good enough pace that it felt like Kyle Larson wouldn't catch him, Mike. And then they throw the caution for raindrops, right?
Yeah, it starts raining.
And they have a red flag. Are they going to restart it? And then they have they start the race back. And then a lap in, he wins the restart. A lap in, there's a wreck. They do an overtime. And then he has to beat Kyle Larson again off the start. And that is really hard. Kyle Larson is one of the best drivers in any car he gets in, honestly. So I feel like Bubba Wallace absolutely earned that multiple times yesterday.
Yeah, he really did. And honestly, it's fun to see. And to give people a background, like, he's won rain-shortened race at Talladega. Mm-hmm. He won another race at, I believe, Kansas, but mm-hmm. it wasn't his car. It was actually Kurt Busch's car, and they switched for the kind of driver's point stand, or the owner's point standings. So this is, like, him bringing the 23 car, and he gets a chance to speak to Michael Jordan, his car owner, afterwards on the phone, and Michael just says, hey, I'm going to have a couple of celebratory drinks tonight. Michael's usually at a lot of these races. He actually wasn't, so he gets on the phone with him yesterday, but Bubba's got a newborn baby he and his wife had during the offseason, and to see kind of that moment where his wife and his baby are in attendance and he's kind of laying on the bricks at the start-finish line at Indianapolis Motor Speedway and has the baby there, just emotional as it can get. And then you check Bubba's Twitter like late last night and he's like got his shirt off in his driveway and he's spraying champagne around all of his friends. You can just tell that people inside of the garage absolutely love Bubba Wallace as a friend, and it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, the way the drivers celebrated him yesterday.
Yeah,
coming
really
on
cool.
track. Yeah, you don't see that very often, Allie. I love that they bump them with their tires.
A little tap, little tire rub.
They put the tire mark on the side of their car.
A little nudge.
It's kind of like saying I was here.
I've gotten to kiss those same bricks.
Have you really?
Yeah, because I ran the mini Indy, and you get to go through.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really, really cool.
Do they taste like tire?
Yeah, what is?
I mean, I was a little bit. I mean, I was like, "There's so many germs."
Yeah, right. You're like, how many millions of people have kissed these bricks over the years? No, it is, and it's interesting too. You know that whole place. It's a massive, massive track.
Yeah,
and the whole place used to be bricks, like 4 million bricks or something like that. It's kind of crazy to think about.
There's a lake somewhere on the property that when they pulled most of those bricks up, they put them in.
Yeah, they dumped them.
It's and Dale Jr. did a. That Lost Speedways show, and he went and found some of them. It's pretty cool. I mean, you want your auto racing history. I mean,
there
Mike,
you go.
Mike and I are not, we don't know everything, but we know some.
Well, are y'all ready to hear about my larger-than-life weekend? So, yes, it was the long-awaited trip to Vegas to see the Backstreet Boys play the Sphere. Now, I am a massive Backstreet Boys fan, but I've seen them multiple times. I'm spoiled when it comes to concerts. So when they first announced this was happening, I was like, I'm not worried about it. But I had a friend who was like, no, I've been to the Sphere. If you even mildly like someone, you have to go experience it.
Wow.
Because it's just like unlike anything you're ever going to see. I don't know if I can go to another concert without being disappointed unless it's at the Sphere.
When you said that earlier, I was like, okay, is it because that show was so good because of the group, or is it because of the Sphere, or is it just both?
Both, right. But I would say the Sphere in general is just such an attraction because the way the Backstreet Boys opened up their show, it was almost like you're on a ride. We were on the floor, so it kind of had a space theme, but we were like shooting through space, and you could feel it. I could feel it in my stomach that we were, you know, it was like those 3D rides when you go to Disney and things like that. Yeah. So it was pretty insane. Stimuli overload. And all of us, it looked like a cult, y'all, in Vegas, because they told us to wear white. So everybody's donning their white dresses sensible shoes. Because
now, had they passed out Kool-Aid, would you?
I was thinking the same thing.
Would you been like,
I wasn't going to bring out Jonestown, but I was like, here we go.
I mean, it was just there. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But it was such, like I said, it was stimuli overload. And I'm so, so glad I did it, even though it was so pricey. And, you know, anytime you leave the hotel room in Vegas, you're spending at least $100, $200. I mean, you're going to get a breakfast sandwich and it's $30. It's just ridiculous when you go out to Vegas.
I know.
But we had a wonderful, wonderful time. Tried to go to Pauly D. We went, got to the club. It was super packed. And it was right after the concert. So we got there about 11. And we finally get in. My sister Jen and I finally were wiggling our way around. And we look, and it's not Pauly. And so I Googled real quick, like, what time does Pauly D go on? Sometime between 1 and 2 a.m. We're like, nope, we're not doing this.
1 and 2 a.m. is when Vegas is popping. What are you talking about? No, yeah.
But it was so packed. And one of the girls in our group, she actually did stick around and went. Oh, she was like,
good for her.
Well, she was like, no, it was so crowded. I felt uncomfortable, like unsafe. So she left eventually.
Was there a lot of white in there too? Like a lot of people go right over from it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It looked ridiculous.
I went, which club was he playing at?
Omnia.
Is that the one?
Said, Omnia.
Is that the one that's like at an out, like they're like part of it's got like at the pool at one of those hotels?
No,
it's
at the Venetian.
Stuff.
We did have a couple girls go to a pool party before the Backstreet Boys concert. They almost didn't make it.
Yeah.
Well, because there's one club.
Good for them.
Wasn't that bad. There's one club that does go outside, and it's rare. Their pool, it's like where the pool is. And it's a huge club. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. So Vegas did try to keep me though.
Uh oh.
How so?
Because when I was leaving yesterday, my Delta app would not let me check in. I was like, what is going on? Went to the desk to get it fixed. And the attendant was like, your name doesn't match your name.
Oh, dude.
It reverted to my maiden name. And my maiden name is oddly similar to my married name. So it's very confusing and very suspicious. And the guy's like, well, who booked your flight? I'm like, I did. He's like, have you flown with your married name? I'm like, I'm standing here in an Atlanta Track Club shirt. Yeah. I flew here.
Got here somehow.
I'm just trying to go home. And he was like, well, TSA is going to give you a real hard time about this. I'll write it on your ticket, but you're going to have to call the Sky Miles number, blah, blah, blah. And it was so, I'm just like, let me go home. I don't want to stay in Vegas and spend all this money anymore. Yeah. I made it, though.
It's one of those times where you look at the guy and you're like, I realize you have a job to do, sir. I really do.
Please.
Let's be serious.
Just switch the MAC to MCA. Come on. That's all you got.
I don't even have to take my shoes off anymore. It's not that difficult.
But if you're going to see, if you like any act at all and they're going to the Sphere, absolutely go. Like my sister, Jen, and I already plan to take my mom and my sister back, the other sister back, because it was just absolutely incredible.
The other sister.
I got two of them. I got two brothers, too. We got to take them all.
The other sister.
Well, coming up next, we're going to hear from Jeff Ulbrich on how the Falcons defense is looking a little bit different from last year. That is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.